This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're tuned in to Bar None. My name's Daryl Ong, and this is the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. On the show this week, we dive into the world of equestrian with Kabil Ambak, the most successful Malaysian in SEA Games equestrian history, with 9 gold medals from 3 outings. His love for riding started at an early age, but only started getting into the competitive field in 1992, where he was trained by Australian trainer Jenny Brookman. Since then, he's been representing Malaysia in numerous equestrian events around the world, most notably the 21st SEA Games, where he took home 4 medals, which then led him to being crowned the most outstanding male athlete of the Games, as well as awarded Malaysian Olympian of the year 2001. Having come out of retirement last year, after 7 years of competitive inactivity, Kabil, along with his younger sister, Kusandra, competed in the 2017 SEA Games, winning a gold and a silver medal. Currently based in Europe, he takes us through how he got started in horse riding, gives us an insight into the competitions, and also shares his hope in competing in the upcoming Asian Games. First up, Kabil tells us of his experience training in Europe.
Well, there's a lot of difference in terms of the mileage you get. Locally, we don't have that many competitions, so it's quite tough for us to get the exposure. So in Europe, you have almost every weekend you have a shows competition. So in terms of horse riding, competing, Europe, it's faster for you to improve yourself.
Right. And all those are you know, based on the quality of coaches, I guess, that you have.
Yes, that's correct.
Does the weather play a part? I mean, Malaysia panas kan?
Yeah, for the panas. For the horses, definitely the weather plays an important part. In our country, we need horses with a bit more, they call blood, which is a bit more
blood.
Hot. They call, in terms of horse riding, they always call blood. We have a lot, a bit more excited horses to compete in this kind of weather. So if you get those lazy horses, they will be very difficult, you know, to get them going in the ring. But so most of my horses are has a lot of blood, so it's that type of horses that I like.
Right.
Yeah.
And how do you get blood into a horse?
Well, the horse, because each horses have different character, so they are born. Sometimes some are born a bit lazy, some are more, you know, excited.
Active,
so
right.
Active, excited, and so it depends on the horse itself. Because even in equestrian, there's a lot of different breeds of horses, and especially in show jumping and dressage, most of the horses come from Europe. They are warm bloods. They are not the thoroughbred that they use for racing or the polo ponies for polo. So they are different breeds. So you can't use a show jumper to do to play polo.
One horse doesn't fit all.
Yeah, that's right.
Take me back to your early days, man. How did you start getting into the sport? And do you remember your first horse ride? And what hooked you in?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, my dad started riding. And we had this farm, sort of a fishing farm, actually, which we go every weekend with the family. So my dad had bought us a pony, so we sort of tried to ride it around the farm. Then suddenly my dad said, okay, why don't you you train to learn how to ride properly.
Professionally.
Yeah. So we started off in Australia to learn how to ride.
Did you want to?
Well, in the beginning, I was very scared. My first lesson, I just sat on the horse without the horse moving for an hour because I was really scared. Among the three of us, the family, I was the last sort of to take up riding.
And you guys pretty much went as siblings, right? You guys
three of us, my sister and my elder brother.
Yeah, so tell me a bit about, you know, those early years, the training in Australia.
Yeah, in the early years, Australia was fun for us as we were quite young, 10, 11 years old. And it's nice because three of us ride, the whole family. So every time the whole family goes together, it's like a family outing.
That's
my
nice.
Parents, and we had a lot of fun. In the beginning, it was not as tough as you know when you start competing.
Back then, did you ever think that you'll reach this point now?
Not really. We were just having fun, and you know. But then, at a certain point, when we start being more serious in the sport, then we thought, okay, yeah, it's not.
Do you remember the moment where, you know, you, like you say, you're just riding for fun and then something just clicked and then you went professional, right? No. Maybe a first competition or, you know, a proper trainer. Do you remember that moment?
It was actually when I was in Canada, in Calgary, Canada, when I was competing in the junior championship.
Oh.
And then winning the first competition there in Europe, I thought, wow, this is nice. The feeling is nice to win, you know. So I thought, okay, I want to go further, you know, try to achieve more. So it was good. Mm.
And look where we are today. You went into retirement in 2010, but you decided to return at last year's SEA Games. Why did you decide to take a break from competing, and also what do you do in that 7-year gap?
Yes, because it was quite tough living in to do the competition in Europe, and you have to be there full time to be a professional rider. Then at one point, instead of spending a lot of money on horses, so I thought, okay, I have to stop and to start a family and, you know, concentrate on the family business. And that's why I started to slow down and not completely stop, but I still ride every day to keep myself fit. But I thought, okay, you have to do something else in life to, you know, to support, not just to take out money, but to try to gain some money out of, you know, so we have to work. Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, you just came back out of retirement, you know, what pushed that decision?
Well, we were actually called back to sort of represent, help the country, the team, as the games were held in Kuala Lumpur and we want to win the gold. So we were called, but it was not so easy because we were all retired. We don't have the right horse. So in that short period, I think about a year, we was given a year to prepare ourselves.
To scramble everything.
Yeah, so me, my sister, we had to go to Europe to look for horses, buy horses and start training and do like a very intensive training.
So I'm sure. 7-year gap is a long time.
Yeah, so we were, and I am doing two disciplines, show jumping and dressage. So it was two completely, it was one horse in Germany, one in Denmark. So I had to drive 3-4 hours to one horse back. And, you know, it was not.
It's hectic.
It was very hectic.
and then, you know, when competing itself, when you went out for your first performance, what was your feeling back then? You know, you're back on the competitive field after 7 years, you know, in front of the home crowd.
Yeah. It felt great, especially in front of the home crowd and actually in my home, you know, the venue of the SEA Games. So it felt really good. And we managed to win the gold, so even better, you know.
Yeah. Congrats. You guys make Malaysia proud.
Yeah, thank you.
Were there, you know, while growing up, while you spent your time in Australia, until now, you know, who were the riders that you really looked up to? Is there any icons?
Yeah, there were a few riders, some British riders who, you know, most of them are European riders that I look up upon. They are, because they are like horsemen. They know all about horses, and I think it's something that because this sport is a bit unique, because it involves a human and an animal.
Yeah.
Which you have to understand the animal to be able to be a team.
Yeah. Which brings me well to my next point. You know, you just mentioned that you had to train with two different horses, you know, running.
Yeah.
Tell me about your current lineup of horses. You know, how do you choose them? You know, was the scouting really hard to do?
Yeah, the scouting is hard in terms of the price of horses and the type of horses, and the good ones are not easy to find normally.
Okay.
You normally build up the horses from young, but because we don't have that time, we have to look for horses that sort of ready to compete. And there are certain types of horses that suits the rider. It can be a really good horse, but it doesn't suit you. It might be suitable for my sister, for example.
Okay.
Her horse might not be suitable for me, but you know, so that's why it's tough to find the right one.
Right. So when you say suitable, what do you mean?
In terms of the style of riding.
Style of riding.
Yeah. Okay. Like, for my style, I like horses with, like I said, blood, a bit active, forward going.
Mm.
And my sister, you know, she has slightly different styles.
Does gender play a part at all?
Normally, mares, they call, you know, the female, a bit more sensitive than stallions. But the stallions are a bit more suitable for guys than for ladies to ride. So, but mostly most of my horses are mares, which is, I like it because they are a bit more sensitive and they are a bit sharper when you want to compete with them. So,
How important is the bond between the human and the animal? Like you said, you don't grow up with the horses, right? You buy them when they were fully developed and stuff. Do you feel that you lose that important part of growing up the animal?
Yeah, that's why it takes a lot. Normally, at least a year to get to know the horse. So because of the short period of time, so you have not much choice, but you spend most of the time riding them at the stable, grooming, taking them out for walks, so that you understand. Because each horse has different characters. Some horse you can work for 1 hour, they are okay. Some horses you just work 15 minutes, then they get upset.
Right.
So it's
Pretty much like humans.
Yeah, it's a bit like human. So when you can deal with horses, you can deal with human. You guys.
Tell us about your horses.
Yeah, I have at the moment I have two horses in Germany. They are quite young horses that I competed. One I compete in the last SEA Games. Yep. Yeah, and I'm planning to compete for the Asian Games this year. And the other one that I lease in Denmark is a dressage horse. And that one also is a 12-year-old, and he was he still holds the world record for the highest percentage in the Prince St. George.
Wow.
Test, yeah.
So your treasured pets. Do they have names?
Yeah, one is called Kalisha, the other one Kadira, and the dressage is Walker.
Okay, it's cool. So you currently have three horses you use for dressage and show jumping.
Yes.
Can you just explain to us, bring it back to the whole umbrellas under it? There's dressage, there's show jumping, and also endurance. For people that doesn't really know about this kind of stuff, can you just explain what the three?
In equestrian, there's actually a few disciplines. They have show jumping, which it's a course, and they put up fences, and you have to jump clear and the fastest time. The second one is like dressage, which is like it's a bit like gymnastic. They give you a routine and you have to sort of see how the horse can do all the movements, given movements, how obedient they are. And the other one, they have they call it eventing, where they do cross country over logs and all. Those are the main three Olympic disciplines. Then apart from that, they have endurance, which is long distance, and also they include polo, but those are the sports that.
And you would say that you focus a lot more on show jumping and dressage.
Yeah, for me, I only do show jumping and dressage mainly.
Which would you say is the more challenging one for you?
For me, the more challenging one is the dressage. Dressage, because it's very, you have to be very precise. Everything, it's because it's and it's very subjective also, subjective sport. So each movement is given a mark out of 10. Right. So if they have to do a certain routine, and then they have 5 judges who gives you marks on the movement. Mm. So you have to be very precise in terms of the correctness of the movement.
Right.
So it takes more time to train.
And
yeah.
Oh man, bring us through how you do that, man. Like teaching a horse is one thing, but you know.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time. So that's why when you're involved in this sport, you spend most of your time with the horses. So even when we were in school, we were like in a government school, but half of the year we are not in school because we go to compete and to train. Because it takes a lot of time, but because it's our horses, it's something like you can't just, it's not like a racket where you can keep, it's a live animal, so you have to be.
It's not like a car, so right, where you can change the different parts.
Yeah. So
okay. You are not no stranger to the SEA Games. 2001 was a big year for you. Your biggest achievement, you said, right? In 2001, you took 4 gold medals. You were named the most outstanding male athlete in the SEA Games, and also awarded Malaysian Olympian of the Year. 2001. Taking you back to those days when you were just going to Australia riding for fun and being a Malaysian, Malaysian Olympian of the Year.
Yeah.
Quite a jump.
It was quite a surprise for me to be able to achieve that, but it was something very memorable, and especially winning it in your home country in front of your home crowd. So it's something that I've never dreamed of before, but it happened. So it was something that will last for me forever with me. So it's you can't describe the feeling when you do that. It's just push you to try harder, more. when you achieve something.
Thinking back when you were preparing for that 2001 SEA Games and also the recent one, the 2017 one, I'm sure the 2017 one's way more intensive, right?
Yeah, the 2017 is very, very intensive as we had very short period of time. Not only we had to train to compete, we had a lot of issues that we have to, a lot of stress, because you have to compete in front of your home crowd and, you know, being the host and you want to perform the best. And there's a lot of pressure that we have to handle, we have to sort of, you know, go through.
I think pressure for humans is one thing, but I'm sure the pressure for the horses is there too, right?
With the horses also, they had to travel from Europe, from Germany, and those horses that I was riding, they've never been to this part of the world. So I was quite worried because whether they will acclimatize well when they arrive, but so far it was good that they did.
One gold and silver.
So not bad, so okay.
Who would you say are your toughest rivals? Or rather, right now in Asia, who are the top countries? In
the top country in this sport, in equestrian sport, and show jumping, mainly from the Middle East, the Qataris, the Saudis, and also the Japanese, where they have been in this sport for many, many years. They've even won Olympic gold medals in this sport. So we are considered quite new. Not really new, but it's up and coming.
Right.
But in Asian game level, we've been doing pretty well, especially in dressage. We brought back medals every time we compete in the Asian game, so which is still up there in Asia.
Well, yeah, but then again, we're not breaking through the next level, right? Being competing with the likes of Japan and some Middle East countries.
I think what's stopping us because of the funding, you know, because at this level, we can self-fund ourselves. But at Olympic levels, we need help. We need support because one horse can cost up to 10 million euros. I don't think that many people want to spend that money and, you know, for just one event. So it's tough. That's why we are stuck at that level. But at the lower level, there's many like coming up, young riders, but they are always stuck at that level when they need the support.
Aren't you getting any support now? From
at the moment, is mainly it's all self-funded, and all the ones that are competing, mainly they are all self-supported, and they are, because they are passionate about the sport, they are willing to spend. Because to get sponsors is not so easy for us. It's not a popular sport. It's something that people think like, okay, if you can ride, you can support yourself, which is really.
I mean, the sport does have that status, or rather the stigma of it being an elitist, right? Just
that's
for the
correct
upper class.
Right.
What do you think can be done to make it even more accessible?
Because at the moment, we have to sort of let people know, like the public know what the sport is about. Like, I mean, to ride, just general riding, it's not expensive. You can ride for 30, 40 ringgit a horse. But when you reach to a competitive level, that's a different, you need a different budget for that. So that's why it's hard when you reach the level. But to ride, there are so many riding clubs in KL itself that...
I guess if you want to be serious, you want to be competitive, then you have to invest more.
Yeah, invest more. I think it also, other sports also the same, you know. So
let's move on now to your training methods. Human and animal sport, but is there any, you know, training routines that you've done not involving a horse?
Okay, well, I try to keep myself fit, but by not to put on so much weight and for the horse. But apart from that, when I riding is already part of the work,
the
workout, because one horse is like running a 10-kilometer
marathon
if you really work, you know, with the horses. But
okay.
Unless you go for just a hike out in the forest with the horse.
Just a stroll, right?
Stroll, then, then that's not. But
so what is one thing you say, one attribute you must have to be a good rider?
I think you have to be very disciplined. Because with horses, it involves a lot of time. You have to sacrifice your time. In Malaysia, we have to start early because when it gets about 10 o'clock, it's too hot for the horses. So we have to start at least at 7 to ride them early. So you have to sort of be disciplined to wake up every day to ride and train at that time, and you know, and not just leave your horse after, you know. You have to take care, you have to see their what they eat and their in terms of health to get the vet to look and their farriers. So a lot it plays.
And also when you're on the horse, right? Yeah. You know, I'm sure a lot of things are going on your mind when you're doing your routine. Mm-hmm. Is composure one of it? Like say the horse is acting differently to what you expected. You know, how do you reel it back in?
That's why you sort of had to know your horse well. So you know if this horse one day, today he doesn't feel like working an hour, let's say 15 minutes is enough. So after 15 minutes, you just stop. And, you know, you don't push them.
Okay.
When you push them, then they get to a point that they won't listen to you anymore.
They won't like you anymore.
So it's important to know your horse. That's the main. And then once you already know your horse, you trust them and you're confident with them. So wherever you go, you know that this horse, okay. Some horses are afraid of people. Some horses are afraid of cars. So this horse, when you're confident, they could feel. Because horse can sense. If you're scared, for example, if you put a beginner rider on a horse, that a competition horse, immediately they know it's a beginner.
Just the way you know, yeah, sit down.
The way you just sit on the horse, they know, okay. And if you're nervous, even worse. They will play you out. They will take you for a ride. So you have to be confident and...
Okay, so all this is the horse being, you know, sensitive to what the rider's feelings are. But how about the other way around? You know, how do you know when the horse is overstressed, you know, overworked? Are there like clear signs? Do they, you know, kick up a fuss or something?
Yeah, they do actually, you know. when you ask something, for example, when they are really tired, when you ask something, there's no response. That means they're okay. They say, okay, now I'm not doing anything today. So it's better off just go back and start again tomorrow.
Let's try again. Last few questions, Kabil. You've been in horse riding for a long time. Do you think you have a long time more ahead of you?
Well, I'm planning for this year. I'm planning and preparing myself for the Asian Games. So I hope that we'll be able to compete in the Games and try to continue to compete in this sport, which is not, there's not many riders that are competing for Malaysia especially, and to make this, to improve and to get more riders involved, more up-and-coming riders involved in the sport.
And probably that will mean, you know, the opening of academies maybe, you know, things that can do.
Yeah, I think it's important first that people know the sport, what equestrian is about, you know, about horses, because this is a sport that is in our country is not so popular and not publicized widely because of the status that always people think it's for the... But I think it's something, a sport that it's in general everyone can ride. But riding is very addictive, horse riding. So when you're into it, it's hard to get out of it, you know, because you're... You get the bond between the horse, that's what makes it interesting, I think, in this sport.
Anyone listening to this now who really, you know, wants to get into horse riding and young riders, you know, do you have any advice for them?
Well, the young riders, I think it's important for them to find the right horse that goes with them and for them to get exposure and do a lot of competitions. If you want to compete at the SEA Games, Asian Game level, you need to get the exposure and get a good trainer. I think it's, and then in this sport, it's, you have to try first and then you will know.
That was Kabil Ambak, the Malaysian equestrian champion. And with that, we've come to the end of this week's edition of Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. If you'd like to revisit our interview with Kabil, do head over to our website www.bfm.my. If you'd like to get in touch with us, do tweet us, we're at BFM Radio. And also don't forget to download our latest app via Google Play and the App Store. My name's Daryl Ong, thanks for listening, and do join us again next week on Bar None, right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.